Now it's time for Composer of the Week here on Radio 3 with Donald MacLeod, exploring the life and music of Edward Elgar.
The Elgars' attempt to begin their married life and launch his career in fog-bound London in 1890 ended in failure. They retreated to the clearer air of the gentle slopes of Malvern. There, through the 1890s, Elgar began, slowly but steadily, to build a reputation, with important successes at the Three Choirs Festival. We get glimpses at every turn in the music he was composing in these years of the great masterpieces to come. It was for the Three Choirs Festival, held in Worcester that year, that Elgar composed his substantial oratorio, The Light of Life. It originally had the Latin title Lux Christi, but that was thought to have too much of a whiff of Roman Catholicism about it. We'll hear the end of the oratorio, leading to Jesus' aria, I Am Their Good Shepherd, and the final choral apotheosis, Light of the World.
Thank you. Thank you.
concluding movements of Elgar's oratorio, The Light of Life, we heard the voices of Linda Finney, Arthur Davis and John Shirley Quirk with the London Symphony Chorus and the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Richard Hickox. In their move back from London to familiar home country in the summer of 1891, Edward and Alice were not alone. They took with them their 18-month-old daughter Caris, named in a telescope fashion after her mother, Caroline Alice. They didn't return, as you might expect, to Worcester, where Elgar had grown up, but to Malvern, where they took a house facing the brow of Malvern's North Hill. They had a cook and a parlourmaid, and dressed for dinner, even when there were just the two of them. There was a decent-sized garden, and it was set back from the road, but close to the station as it was, Elgar found it disturbingly noisy, complaining, "I can't write at all." It was a situation, according to Elgar's biographer, Gerald Northrop Moore, which would become a pattern. This uneasy suburban juxtaposition of town and country would characterise every house of their married life, dreaming of the country, yet not daring to leave the town. Yet the landscape Elgar began exploring in the gaps between lessons, the long, low profile of the Malvern Hills, would have a powerful effect on him and on his music, casting its shadow, according to Moore, over Elgar's impulse to use sequences of rhythm and of melody to generate longer lines in his music. He would come home by different paths, as Moore says, "As you left home by whatever path, still you knew your music would return in the end to its home key to make its form in time." That mazurka, one of three characteristic pieces which appeared as Elgar's Opus 10, was played there by the violinist Marat Bisengaliev and the pianist Benjamin Frith. It's interesting that Elgar's early cantatas, The Black Knight, King Olaf and now Caractacus, were all on stories of outsiders. Though Elgar had chosen not to move back to Worcester and slip straight back into all his family connections there, he was at least in Malvern within easy reach of those contacts. In 1897, his mother, who was by then 75, took herself off on holiday to the western side of the Malvern Hills to the village of Colwall. At the end of her visit, Elgar and Alice went over to see her. His mother recalled how, "We stood at the door, looking along the back of the hills, the beacon in full view. I said, 'Oh, Ed, look at the lovely old hill. Can't we write some tale about it? I quite long to have something worked up about it. So full of interest.'" The idea of doing something to please his aged mother stayed with Elgar, and so when, 4 months later, a commission from Leeds Festival came along for a cantata, his mother's idea of drawing direct inspiration from the landscape came back to him. He steeped himself in the spirit of the place, tramping over the hills around the Herefordshire Beacon and along the Druid Path from end to end along the top of the hills. There's a photograph of him from just this time, sitting, tweedily attired, pipe in hand, gazing out from a slope on the Malvern Hills. It was on that mound of the Beacon, with its Iron Age fort, that, according to legend, the ancient British chieftain Caractacus made his fateful last stand against the Romans. He was captured and taken to Rome, where the Emperor Claudius was so impressed by his eloquence that he pardoned the chieftain and his men. In his treks over the Malvern Hills, Elgar soaked up the atmosphere and wrote the music of Caractacus in the little cottage called Birchwood Lodge, buried in woodland, but with wonderful views over the Valley of the Severn. He said he wove the singing of the trees there into the score. We'll hear the second scene of Caractacus, where we eavesdrop on a ceremony of the Druids gathered in a sacred oak grove by the Tomb of the Kings. The Druid Aubin tells of his vision of an eagle flying in the sky with red beak and talons, surely an omen of disaster. The soloists here are Arthur Davis, Stephen Roberts and David Wilson Johnson, with the London Symphony Orchestra and Chorus, conducted by Richard Hickox.
Shadows, let him see clearly what the omens be. I see an eagle flying with beak and talons red. I see a warrior lying
to the Father.
When Caractacus asks the Druids what the holy omens show, they reassure him and tell him that Rome and all her legions shall shudder before him. In that excerpt from Elgar's Cantata Caractacus, we heard David Wilson Johnson in the title role with Arthur Davis, Stephen Roberts and the London Symphony Orchestra and Chorus, conducted by Richard Hickox. It was the Enigma Variations which brought Elgar to national prominence the year after Caractacus in 1899. Immediately afterwards, he composed a song cycle, all the poems being on the subject of the land's mighty counterpart, the sea. The waters Elgar faced in Sea Pictures offered no comforting opposite bank. As Elgar's biographer, Gerald Northrop Moore, has observed, these pictures opened the prospect of a voyage into the self. The five poems Elgar set are all by different authors, and the first four present self-contained vignettes in which the sea is viewed with a mixture of fear and fascination. Sea Pictures was well received by the public from the outset. When the striking contralto Clara Butt appeared at the Norwich Festival in October of 1899, dressed in a mermaid outfit and uncorseted, guiltless of all confinement was the contemporary description. In a fitting metaphor for an island nation, the shoreline here represents the boundary between the finite and the infinite, the careworn and the carefree, routine and escape. In the first song, Sea Slumber, by Roden Noel, an elfin ocean mother lulls her fractious child to sleep to a gently rocking accompaniment which gradually broadens and deepens. Then we'll hear the last song of the cycle, The Swimmer, by Adam Gordon, a figure whose suicide would have been familiar to the original audience. This is a picture of Flying Dutchman-like, storm-lashed, grim and craggy coasts, and images of the damage the savage sea wreaks on men and their ships. But this is juxtaposed with recollections of a distant past when the sea was a gentle companion. As the singer challenges the might of the sea, Elgar unleashes the full force of his orchestra.
Thank you.
It's not difficult to see Elgar picturing himself in that image of a man swimming against the might of a storm, yet sturdy and confident as he himself was, mostly in the face of the hostility of the world. In those two songs, The Swimmer and Sea Slumber Song from his Sea Pictures, the soloist was Felicity Palmer with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Richard Hickox. But the tide had already begun to turn for Elgar, and with the dawning of a new century came an honorary doctorate from Cambridge and a knighthood. We'll be hearing from The Apostles, his sunny Cockaigne Overture, and more music inspired by landscape, but this time with In the South, The Hills Are in Italy.
Composer of the Week with Donald MacLeod, and that'll be here on BBC Radio 3 at the earlier starting time tomorrow night of 6 o'clock. Or if you prefer, the programme has its first broadcast at midday tomorrow